didn't start a business just to keep the lights on. You're here to sell more today than yesterday. You're here to win. Lucky for you, Shopify built the best converting checkout on the planet. Like the just one tapping, ridiculously fast acting, sky-high sales stacking champion of checkouts. That's the good stuff right there. So if your business is in it to win it, win with Shopify. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/win.
I'm Kiana, and I leveled up my business with Shopify. Once I figured out that Shopify was a thing, I never turned back. I can create a site with my eyes closed. Shopify thinks ahead of us, you know, and it thinks about the customer more than anything. Every day I'm thinking about some other new business, but Shopify is doing it to me because it's so easy to use. It's like I can't stop. I'm addicted.
Start your free trial at shopify.com.
Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey, welcome to the Saving with Steve show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money, pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a happier, healthy relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to thank you for joining us. I really want to thank you for sharing us with your friends and family. We're really grateful for that because we've seeded well over a million listeners. We've got well over a quarter million listeners overseas. So we really, really appreciate that. But you know what? We've got something special today. Okay. Everybody's trying to figure out, hey, how do I make some wise financial decisions moving forward here in 2026? With that, we have a very special guest. His name is Richard McHorter. He's a certified financial planner, managing partner, and private wealth advisor at SRM Private Wealth based in Beverly Hills. Mr. Horter brings more than three decades of financial experience to clients who lives intersect with music, sports, entertainment. He's been recognized by Forbes, Barron's, in the Financial Times. He's been featured in major outlets like Business Insider, U.S. News and World Report, Beyond Finance. He connects influence and impact, bringing celebrities, philanthropies, and purpose to creating lasting value beyond a balance sheet. So, Richard, welcome to the show. We're glad you're here. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you for having me this morning.
And as we were talking about before, we're really grateful that you weathered the LA traffic. So let's just start out by, you know, I know you've been in the business for 30 years. I don't know how many people have asked you, but our viewers just love to know how you got into what you're doing.
So it's an interesting story. So I was 17 years old and I got an internship at Dean Witter Reynolds back then, which doesn't exist any longer, but Dean Witter, we started as an intern and then we moved to a receptionist at the same office. And then I became a sales assistant. And then 1992, I got my break and got sponsored to become a financial advisor.
Oh, wow. So it just was an intern, something you love talking with the people or?
Yeah, you know, you just started to meet various individuals who are clients of the advisors that I worked with and just kind of fell in love with the whole personal aspect of it all and helping these people out. You know, for me, it was just, you know, this ongoing transformation into what I'm doing today.
Well, that means you've also seen people for generations, because some people, you know, they pass away and then it's their kids and then it's their kids and so on and so forth. And you see new families building up and the whole shot. So that should be pretty fun.
You know, our business is 4 to 5 generations in some instances. So, you know, watching the patriarch and matriarch of the family and then be passed down to the next generations and then they have kids and they have grandkids and now some have great grandkids and it's wonderful being part of that. Once again, that transformation of these families as well. So,
well, that's really cool. It's very interesting. So let's get started talking about what's important to our listeners.
Sounds good.
One of the biggest things we got questions are, hey, I'm retiring here in 2026. What are the things that I need to do to make sure everything's in place before I do that?
Yeah, we have spent a lot of time helping families figure out when they can retire, at retirement, and then post-retirement. So in the present time, like if you're looking to retire soon, you need to start looking at what your spending is. That's kind of where we start off. I can back into what's necessary based upon the various rates of return that we can derive off of various investments. What I cannot do is I cannot control that spending. That's a very personal side of that. I can help you budget. I can help you do those types of things. But in reality, the spending part of it is the one caveat to any of these conversations. You know, we have clients that I've dealt with that have nine figures, but spend seven figures a month.
Oh,
so are they going to go broke? Right. That spending piece is very, very hard for me to be effectual on, because those are personal decisions that are made. But we also have people that have six figures and have lived their life very well for their spending levels. They're not spending as much as they're making. So the reality is you have to start looking at your spending. What am I going to be doing? What am I spending money on? Items like that. Then we have to look at the assets that you have accumulated over a period of time. And then how are we going to use those assets to generate the income at retirement for what you're going to need?
Okay. So what's really interesting is many people, and I'm just going to go down this little rabbit hole because I've got a lot of questions, sure, is they've spent the last 20 years, both have salaries, both make good wages, the whole shot, but they've really never paid attention to their spending because they've always had the money and they've always been able to throw money in a 401k or do whatever, and it's no big thing. And they've never really thought about it. So when it comes down to spending, what is the first thing somebody should start looking at or preparing for when it comes to budgeting? Not really budgeting, it's just how to figure out what you're spending.
No, it's a great question. A lot of that, we start to look at 3, 4, 5 month averages over a period of time. And we actually go itemize each one of those so that we can see where that spending is occurring and where things can change. In some instances, some people will say to me that I want to have money that's going to go to the next generation. I want to, I've accumulated this money and then I want a certain amount or all of it to go to the next generation. Okay. Then we have to figure it out based upon that, right? How much can I generate based upon the assets and the spending that you're doing today? Those may not match up. So we have to be very forthright with the idea that we need to make some spending changes, or we're going to have to take on more risk in the investments to be able to generate a higher amount of return, which could mean a higher amount of losses, right? So the return is great, but we also have to know that when we're taking on more risk, we're also taking on the potential of downside to that. So to answer your question directly, is that we are looking at spending line item by line item by line item and going through that with each of the clients that we're working on this item with.
So in other words, what you're saying is really getting that whole budget or spending detailed out, whether it be travel, whether it be whatever it might be, if it's just the Starbucks run for the last week that you go three times a day. Hey, it is what it is. So we got to look at that. But one of the things you did talk about is some people you look at, hey, we can get this rate of return, but we can also get real risky. Okay. But if we get real risky, there could be a potential for loss. And if there's a potential for loss, you're eating away at your principal, and that could create problems down the road as well.
Absolutely. I saw this in 2000 to 2002. There was locally here, there was a few big companies that had large retirement distributions that were being made. And a lot of those guys were dealing with different financial advisors, and they were getting this advice that they should put the money into the stock market and you're going to get 10% on your money. And then you can take 6% out and you have 3 or 4% for inflation. And but then the markets didn't do 10%, right? They were in 2000, we were down 17 to 20, and the next year about the same, and the next year after that about the same. So when you're drawing down on your investments because they took that risk on, and then you're also having to take out 6%, let's say, in that situation, and then you're trying to plan for inflation, all of that is degrading the value of your, and then it's hard to get back just to flat on that. So there's an old adage in our business that if I have a dollar and it goes to 50 cents, I've lost 50%. But if to go from 50 cents back to a dollar, I have to make 100%. So, you know, you really want to understand that downside risk that will be would be necessary to get to the rates if you're trying to get a higher amount of rate of return.
That's great. That's great. It's important for people to understand and know exactly what they're spending, because I think so often people just don't pay attention because they didn't have to and have it for a long period of time. And now they are. And it's, hey, I don't have a job anymore.
That's right. And I think, you know, listen, I think that a lot of people have somewhat of an understanding of what that looks like. What they don't understand is that how are they going to generate that with their retirement assets, right? They, once again, they look at the stock market. You know, we start off with, and when we're modeling, we're looking at 4, 5, 6% after-tax rates of return. And I like to theoretically underestimate those numbers, because what I want to do is I want to plan on the worst case scenarios, or the worst case scenarios is negative rates of return for a long period of time. But, you know, I want to look at how can we survive at these lower rates of return. And if we can do that, then, you know, the sky's the limit. If we plan too high and it comes in low, then what happens is there's disappointment that's going to come into that at some point. The markets just don't continuously linearly go higher at that rate.
And I think what you're saying is it has a lot to it, because just in the last couple of years, you've seen some significant rises in the market. A lot has to do with AI and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But you know what? There's been times where we went 15, 16 years in a bear market. And if we're dealing with that 15, 16 years in a bear market, that 4, 5, 6% is a happy place, especially if you're if you're looking to retire and maintain your assets. Am I correct in saying that?
Yes. And we saw this, right? In 2008, 2009, we were down 37% from height to trough, right? So if you're down 37%, even just during that 2-year period, it's going to take you 73% just to get back to even, right? So, you know, 1 year, a year and a half could take away so much of that return, and it will take you years to get back up to just even on your money.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And it's really sometimes hard for people to see when you see 20%, 20%.
Right. And we're not used to that, you know? And so even during COVID, people talk about COVID quite a bit. You know, in 2000, the markets were still up during COVID, right? Mm-hmm. We had that horrible time period during, I think it was March, April, May, June. And then the rest of the year, we actually ended up positively. So, you know, people have to understand how the gyrations of this market work. You know, I mean, even earlier this year, we look at this now, we look at it and we like the market's done, had a decent year. But remember in April of this year, the markets were down 10, 15, 20%. So just this year.
That's interesting. People forget that. Hey, folks, you're going to want to stick with us. We'll be right back with Richard here. And we're going to be talking about wise financial decisions here in 2026.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You didn't start a business just to keep the lights on. You're here to sell more today than yesterday. You're here to win. Lucky for you, Shopify built the best converting checkout on the planet. Like the just one tapping, ridiculously fast acting, sky high sales stacking, champion of checkouts. That's the good stuff right there. So if your business is in it to win it, win with Shopify. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/win.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. I truly want to thank you for tuning in, and I appreciate you letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Network, AM FM 247, All these networks are dedicating to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal financial freedom. Hey, let's get back to Richard. We're talking about wise financial decisions here in 2026. Richard, one of the biggest questions that we received is, hey, I'm 65, I retired, I'm 68, 69, 70. What are the things that I need to be thinking about tax-wise, estate-wise, my financial plan as I continue to get older?
Yeah, so, you know, starting off with obviously making sure that you've got enough income or assets for your retirement. The second part would be, you know, how is your estate structured? Meaning that, you know, do I have a trust in place so I can bypass probate and I can use my voice within that trust to pass along my assets to whoever that is? You know, and I know it's not the most enjoyable conversation to be having in regards to my demise, but the reality is that these are very important, as you do not want your family to be in a position where they're having to settle up your estate and they're having to go into probate and spend a lot of money on attorneys and things like that. You can do a lot of that bypassing with the use of a trust. The other thing that, you know, we work on a lot with clients is just the ability for clients to be giving away assets today. So those that can afford to give away, you know, the $19,000 annual gift that you can give away, and maybe even some of the your what they call lifetime exemption, which I believe is $14.8 million, you can give up to that number above and beyond the $19,000 that you can gift annually to whoever you want. So there's a lot of those things, because the one thing that I find a lot of times is we plan on our death through a trust, but we don't get to see our families enjoy the monies that I'm giving them. So why not do, if you can, now a lot of people cannot, but if you can, why not give some of that money today and see that enjoyment in your family?
Okay. So in other words, see how I can align. When you talk about the exemption, that $14.8 million. Mm-hmm. So for example, how would somebody do that? If they were going to give their son $100,000, obviously over the $19,000 exemption, mm-hmm. how would they do that?
Yeah, so you can do it in a variety of different ways, depending on how your assets are, right? We've utilized cash gifts. We've given stock, which is not always the most preferable to do that way, because you retain the original cost basis of the mm-hmm. the original purchase. But the other thing is that we use different trusts. There's things like grantor retained annuity trusts. There are things that you should be having a conversation with your estate attorney on. You know, and they have different ways, different methods to be able to pass these assets to the next generation in a very tax efficient manner. You know, we can set up foundations that families can be part of. We've done that before, and you move money in there and it's for charity, and you can then have the family involved in that. And there's a lot of other perks to setting up a family foundation. So there's a lot of different ways, depending on how your assets are structured. Last point is that in real estate, I can gift percentages of real estate to my family, and it's called fractionalization. And I can use that fractionalization to reduce the value of that property at the time of my passing, because now I don't own 100%, I own less than that. And that would have to be, once again, worked out with your estate planning attorney and accountant.
So the key here of what I'm hearing is there's a lot of things you can do, mm-hmm. but it's important to have your financial advisor and your estate planning attorney together.
Yes.
And then possibly a tax person or a tax attorney there,
for sure,
to make sure you understand what's going on, how you could do things properly, and most importantly, reduce taxation at passing or while you're still alive, so you can give things to the ones you care about and see benefit while you're alive.
That's exactly right. I just, for me, you know, I love the idea of when clients are willing to give assets today, or when they can too. I mean, that is a big caveat to that. But I do really love to see that family bond that comes about from those gifts now. And you see the enjoyment of that today.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you can help somebody make a more prosperous life, that's a wonderful gift. Or creating a foundation that would cover the down payment on a house for a great grandkid or great great grandkid or somebody down the line, or even make sure everybody gets their college paid for, would be significant. That would be impactful for everybody.
100%.
So that's great. So let's talk a little bit about, we have the estate considerations. When, you know, when people start getting a little bit over, we're talking mid 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. what are the considerations they should be looking at it from a financial standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think a lot of, by the time you're 70 and 80, and if you've retired, or, you know, you could be just retiring at that point too. We've had many of those, you know, making sure that you're set up for whatever that is, that however you want to live the rest of your life. I sometimes ask client for their wish list, right? What do you want to do at retirement? What do you want to do in your 60s, 70s, 80s? That would be an absolute wish list. And then I want to figure out, is there a way that we can provide that wish list, right? I come from a mindset that I never want to be on my deathbed going, I wish I would have done, right? Mm-hmm. So I want my clients to at least think through the idea of what is it that I absolutely want to accomplish or absolutely want to do before I die, and can I afford to do that? So my point is that there is a lot of different planning that would take place in your 70s and 80s, where you're getting ready for whatever that looks like, the next 10, 15, 20 years. You know, how is that going to be effectual on me? How's it going to be effectual on my state? How's it going to be effectual on the next generation?
Okay. So now one of the big questions is tax considerations moving here in 2026. I mean, people are getting bombarded with this marketing about doing Roth conversions. Mm. I mean, that's a tax consideration, but there's probably other tax considerations people should be thinking about other than a Roth conversion. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious what your input is on, you know, the tax situation. What should people be looking at? One, and two, a Roth conversion, does it make sense? Or are there other methods that people can use to reduce, eliminate taxation moving forward?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Roth conversion conversation is always interesting. It's just a mathematical calculation on whether or not it makes sense. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, when you do the Roth and you have to pay the taxes today on that person, and then it'll be tax-free over a period of time. The problem with that is I lose, let's say, whatever my tax rate is today. So the question is that, do I do that? Or if I'm taking money out of my 70s, am I going to be at a lower tax bracket? And I've let the money that I would have paid in taxes today on the Roth conversion, I can let that grow for that period of time and then take it out at a later date. So it's just a mathematical calculation on whether or not you, and a bet on where you think interest, taxes are going to be during that period of time. But I do think that, you know, listen, a lot of the tax considerations that take place, once again, depends on how your estate is structured. You know, I think a lot of the tax considerations that you take into place are, you know, what my income is, what I don't have the places to put it away and defer. And so do I look at charitable contributions? Do I look at using my IRA or a 401k rollover? Can I use the required minimum distribution to, instead of paying taxes on it, can I give that to a charity if I'm going to be charitable minded? Do I give that to a charity up to that? I believe it's $100,000 that I can give away without taxes on that money. So, you know, there's so many different nuances depending on how I'm going to, how my estate is structured and what I need from my assets to then decide on which one of these methods. There are many, many, many methods to think about during that tax planning.
Perfect. Again, my name is Steve Sexton. Thanks for joining us. We're talking with Richard McWhorter. And, you know, one of the big topics we want to start talking about is all the stuff that's going on with AI. I mean, we're seeing a high concentration in the stock market with AI companies leading everything out, but it's much bigger than that and the effect on jobs and other things. And just wanted to have a quick chat with Richard about that and get his thoughts and where that could lead.
No, it's a big topic. You know, I would debate that most of the market return over the last 2-3 years has been from the concept of AI. you know, you have AI, you have machine learning, you have electric cars, you have robotics, you have all of these different things that are out there. It just seems like it's accelerated recently with a lot of these, what they call circular deals between various companies. So you have a circular deal, just for explanation, is company A buys 10 billion of company B's products, then company B buys 10 billion of company A's products. And so from my perspective, mathematically, it's a net zero, but in the markets that drives us up, drives stock prices higher. So, you know, I think there's a lot of expectations as to what's going to happen with AI. I think there's a lot of guessing as to what's going to be necessary, what it's going to do, the jobs that it's going to kill, the jobs that it's going to create. The one thing that I do know is I don't know. But I do think that, you know, if we just look at the amount of money that's being spent by companies right now is tremendous. And the question on the stock market front will be, are they able to generate rates of return or increase profit margins because of all the money that they're spending? If I spend $1 trillion, and there are deals out there like that, if I spend $1 trillion, am I going to be able to get that $1 trillion back plus a rate of return on my money? So as far as the stock market, that's that part of it. As far as we as the consumers, the collective we, I would say to you that it's going to be changing very rapidly and very soon. I think we've incrementally been seeing changes that have taken place. I come back to a story where I went to the supermarket with my daughter, and you know, there's three cashiers in a line, and I went to one with a human being, and I saw the automated ones, and the lady behind the cashier said, "There's an opening over at the automated one," and I said to my daughter, I said, she just sent me to her replacement. And we have to remember that, right? We have to remember that we're employing this type of technology, and we are incrementally doing it, whether we know it or not, or we're doing it out of convenience. And so we have to be very cognizant that these are going to reduce the number of jobs. As we use Waymo in the city of Beverly Hills, that is taking a job away from an Uber driver or a taxi driver. Mm-hmm. So each one of these little pieces that just keep dripping into the system, we are employing because of out of convenience or whatever other reasoning, but we have to understand the impact of each one of these decisions.
So that means a lot of people don't realize this, but slowly but surely, many jobs that can be replaced by technology or learning systems is going to go away.
Yes.
In fact, we're already beginning to see that with the number of engineers that were in programming and things like that that are no longer there for major companies like Amazon and others, just because they could use the AI system to create computer programming.
That's right.
So somebody, I have a niece or a kind of a great niece, but she went to work for Amazon at the age of 17 after doing all this computer stuff and getting a bunch of computer certificates and making a considerable amount of money, basically working out of her basement. But the reality is her job's at risk just because those things might not be needed and could be replaced by a machine.
That's right. And I think that, you know, listen, I'll have one more story for you. So I have a friend that is a lawyer for a fast food chain. And he's got 10 people on his staff. And he uses ChatGPT or Gemini or whatever ubiquitous platform there is nowadays. And, you know, he was telling me how he uses it and things like that. And at the end of the conversation, I said to him, I said, okay, so you have 10 people on staff. How many lawyers do you need? He goes, we probably need 3, right? So over time, those 7 attorneys that were doing research, gathering information, are going to be replaced. He also made another really great point, and that is that AI is the worst it will be at this moment. So what we see today will be incrementally better every moment of every day, who knows how long. But the other point that I wanted to make is that if I don't need those 7 attorneys in that situation, then how do I or do I need a junior attorney coming out of school? Or do I need a, and then how does that junior attorney, if I can't, if I don't need him, how does it become a middle attorney? And then how does that middle attorney become a senior attorney? And so how are we cutting out the ability for people to take on these careers because all we need are the seniors? But you can't exceed experience unless you go through the first two processes. And so, listen, I'm not calling for the demise of the job market in the United States. I don't know what's going to happen or what jobs are going to come about because of this. What I am saying is just that the more that we employ these things, these tools, the more that they are going to be impactful on changing our lives, in my opinion.
Oh, I actually totally agree with that, because basically what you said is already beginning to happen in many other industries, and people are going to have to get retrained and figure out what they can do. And you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if there's a position where all the whole job is to prompt, you know, AI to do the right thing.
Right. Oh, and the other thing is that what we don't talk about a lot of the times is the machine learning part of it, right? So we have AI, which is static and relatively static, but then you have the machine learning from itself. Right. It's the same conceptual idea that a lot of people are saying that we don't need computer programmers anymore because the AI will program itself. So this is these are these little nuances that we have to be very cognizant are happening.
So how do you see this affecting the financial planning industry?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, how are people the question is that how do we adapt to it as far as a society within the government? And how do we, if we do have large amounts of job losses, how do we provide something for those people? And then who do we tax to get that money? So, you know, it depends on our reaction to that. And then for those that do have assets and those that do not, it's that planning will be vitally important to be able to survive something like this for sure. And once again, the problem is that, you know, there is no foretelling the future, right? Until it's always, you know, very, very visible after the fact. But the fact of the matter is that at this present time, I have no idea, and nobody does. We're all just trying to prognosticate on what's going to happen. But the reality is that none of us know, you know? And so I just find that it's going to be something that we're going to have to adapt to, and we should start adapting now and start being very cognizant of what's going on around us.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was just thinking about the tax side of things here with the IRS. Mm. And I said, you know what? If they employed AI to audit and review tax returns, it's easier than the mounds of people, because I've heard about people who work for the IRS, how they've got stacks and stacks and stacks of paper in their office from things they just can't get to because there's not enough. Mm. But if that's all fed into AI, that could become very, 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 very efficient. And the information that could be popped out of there and the volume of audits that can be done to make sure things are correct is kind of scary in some respects.
And another thing we have to do is trust that, right? I mean, you know, ultimately, you know, a lot of when AI is doing anything, right, it's like getting in the Waymo for the first time. And when you get into it, you're like, this is a driverless car. I don't know how I feel about this. And then you do it the second time and you're like, oh my God, this is awesome, right? And so you go through this process of getting more and more used to these different items. So as the IRS does it, you know, listen, in my world, right, in our world, it is a... if you look at a lot of the AI, I can give AI in some instances the formula and the inputs, and it gets the answer wrong, mm-hmm. even today. So, but once again, today's the worst it's going to be, right? So it's just going to get incrementally better over time. And that exactness, as it gets more and more exact, we will then feel more comfortable with all of these processes and all this efficiency that we will find with AI, both positive and negative.
That's astonishing. Hey, folks, this has been a great discussion so far. You want to stick with us, and we'll be right back with more Saving with Steve and Richard McWhorton.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve show on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You
didn't start a business just to keep the lights on. You're here to sell more today than yesterday. You're here to win. Lucky for you, Shopify built the best converting checkout on the planet. Like the just one tapping, ridiculously fast acting, sky-high sales stacking champion of checkouts. That's the good stuff right there. So if your business is in it to win it, win with Shopify. Start your free trial today at shopify.com/win.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton, on UK Health Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Saving with Steve show. I want to truly thank you for tuning in. Appreciate you letting us, friends and family and associates, know about the show. Again, all the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying stories of helpful insight and information on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Networks, AMFM 247. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. Hey, we're back here with Richard McLaurin. One of the big questions that viewers, listeners wanted to ask is, what should I be asking my advisor right now?
It's like a great question, by the way.
You know, what are the questions that need to be asked that I don't know or think about?
Yeah, I think in the investment planning part of it, most of the questions that I would be asking a financial planner in general is that as recommendations are made, the biggest question is why are you recommending what you're recommending? Is there, you know, have you done the due diligence on other investments that might be available? Is this all your firm has to offer, or is there other investments outside of your firm that might be better for me? There's a lot of inherent conflicts of interest depending on the type of firm that you're dealing with. I'll give you a quick example on that, not to be,
please.
Yeah. So, if you are at a large firm that's owned by a bank and you ask your advisor for a loan or a home, let's say a home loan, they're going to present their bank's loan because that's all they can present. May not be the best loan, but that's what they can do. Otherwise it's called selling away from the firm, and that becomes an issue for the advisor. So what they have to be, you have to be very careful of is that your firm might have limited amounts of investments. Your firm might have inherent conflicts of interest. And so if I was a client or a prospective client, I would be asking every single recommendation why. And if your advisor cannot explain why, there's an issue. That means they haven't done their due diligence. So from my perspective is that how do I, you know, if I'm going to be presenting an investment investment to somebody, then I want to show 3, 4, 5 different of the same investment. And here's how they're different. I just got done doing this with a client where we've spent the last 2 weeks going on 30-minute, 45-minute conference calls with various it's a private credit situation. So we're looking at private credit, and we went on 3, 4, 5 different ones just to find if which one resonates with the client the best and why. And then he and I talked about it quite a bit to then decide on the fund. That way you can see what the market's got to present. And by the way, there's 50 different options out there. And my job was to weed it down to something that's palatable. But the reality is that you really want to have someone that doesn't have these ties to a particular investment or whatever that may be. If they're making individual stock recommendations, show me the research. You may not be able to read the research and understand what's going on, but at least I know that the financial advisor did some due diligence that versus just coming up with some idea out of the whim. So a lot of it is just keeping check on what's being presented to you so that you're not a victim afterwards of someone that didn't do the due diligence. And you can offset that by just asking the question why.
So basically what you're telling everybody is certain
financial advisors, or not financial, certain, just like a bank, they only have certain types of investments. They only have certain types of loans. Mm-hmm. And those are the only things that they have. So they're only able to pick from that stable, so to speak. Yeah, I got four horses. Pick the one that best works for this situation. And you put it in try to put it in that round hole, so to speak.
That's right.
So if you come in there and say, hey, we have these options, and these are the ones that are available, and these are the ones that would best suit you, even though somebody might not understand, but they know somebody's done the research to find out which one's the best one for their situation.
Right.
Okay.
And then I'm sorry for interrupting.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was just coming to mind is that, you know, in our business, the one question that we ask all clients is that what's your risk tolerance? And the reality for me is your risk tolerance is I want to make as much money as I possibly can and take the least amount of risk. Right. So you don't know what your risk tolerance is unless you've been investing for a while. You don't know what your risk tolerance is until after the fact, in my opinion. Right. And we as financial advisors should learn from the responses and the way that clients act with certain levels of risk. Right. They might want to take on a bunch of risk or buy a stock that a friend told them about. And then when it goes down, they're shocked and dismayed and want to sell it and all this type of stuff. So that's the type of person that probably shouldn't be in that type of stock. So my point is that, you know, a lot of financial advisors also use these models based upon this risk tolerance. And they'll say, here's my five models. There's 50 mutual funds, some ETFs, all in this one bucket. And it's for all my clients that are, let's say, moderately conservative. That makes zero sense to me. Each individual, I don't care what your risk tolerance, each individual is a different human being. And that human being has to be understood. They have different wants. They have different ways that they handle risk. Every single one of them. So this has to be extremely individualized. Otherwise, you're going to be caught in this bucket of five different investment choices based upon this question that really has no sense to it, in my opinion.
So in other words, whoever you are, you're individual and separate. And you need to have a portfolio or a group of investments, whatever it might be, that's customized to you, your risk tolerance, your need for income, all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
Okay. So what would be other questions that people would want to ask their advisor?
Yeah. A lot of the questions that come up, the fee question is always an interesting one. What do I get for that fee? What are you going to do for me? How often are we going to meet? Are we going to be talking? Is this just a one and done and nice to meet you and I'll see you in a few years? Or how personalized is this stuff? Are you going to help me with my estate planning? Are you going to be a voice that I can use for making different investment decisions that may be outside of your daily investment decisions? Are you going to be there as my quarterback or part of my team that's going to be having these conversations with my accountant and my attorneys and all that type of stuff? So, you know, a lot of it, or at least a lot of the questions that we deal with have to do with how are you going to be there? What are you going to help me through? Because life is life. There's so many things that come up. And so who do they call? Who is that person? And are you going to be one or one of the people that I'm going to call to make those decisions? So I would see how involved they're going to be. The second part, though, is that, and it's always a funny one to me, is that when people ask for referrals, I'm more than glad to give referrals. I don't know one advisor in all my years that's given a referral of someone that doesn't like me. Right. So look at their record. You know, a lot of it is, you know, the process of this is a dating process, right? You're going to get to know me over a period of time. And what I'm telling you is what I actually do. There's a great book that I give out to clients. It's called Factfulness. I give out two books. One's called Blink and one's called Factfulness. And both of them have to do with the idea that we have an inordinate or factfulness and we have an inordinate want to believe what people have to tell us. The reality is that maybe it's true. Maybe it's a narrative that I've created. Maybe I'm selling you on something, whatever it may be. So what I'm saying to everybody is that you really want to take your time in dating somebody. You really want to take your time in choosing a financial advisor, and what they're telling you needs to be proven to you, not just take them at face value.
So when you say prove it, it's one of those things where they're showing you they're actually doing that.
Yes. And it doesn't have to be rates of return and all that stuff. I'm not concerned about, I'm saying that they're going to be there for you, that they're going to be talking these things through, that they're going to be explaining the investments to you, all the things that, you know, there's a large difference between an advisor and a salesperson. A salesperson is just pitching product. They're just taking whatever they think or whatever someone's told them, and they're selling that to clients and they're making a commission off of that. Then you have an advisor, and an advisor is going to be there for you. The advisor is going to be by your side as you do your investments, as you do your estate planning, as you do your philanthropic planning, whatever it may be. That's what you have to decide on which one you want. Do you want the salesperson that's going to give you the hot tips and all that kind of stuff and maybe make money and maybe not? Or do you want the person that's actually going to be the advisor for you? And that takes time to understand.
And I think that's wonderful. Hey, folks, I want to thank so much for Richard for being here. But Richard, how can people get a hold of you if they'd like your help? And, you know, obviously, given the parameters where that you work with people.
Yeah, so you can get me on LinkedIn. I'm at Richard McWhorter, McWhorter, or on my website at SRM, S as in Sam, R as in Robert, M as in Mary, privatewealth.com. And our parameters is, listen, I'm here to see if I can be of help. And if I can't, then I can introduce you to somebody either within my firm or outside my firm.
Richard, thank you so much for being on the show today. Folks, I want to thank you all for joining us today here on Saving with Steve. Look forward to seeing you next time right here. Stay safe, stay healthy. And with that, I wish you all a wonderful, happy new year.
Thank you for joining us on the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton on UK Health Radio.